Broadcasting live from South Texas, this is your Petardcast. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, and tonight we'll be bringing a certain I don't know what to the world of comedic podcasting. This is our debut episode, and it will feature me talking, much as I am doing now. Future installments will feature me talking in different voices, talking to other people, which sounds like me talking in different voices, but is not. And possibly whistling, which is a kind of musical breathing. We'll be bringing you interviews with people who will make you rethink the meaning of the word celebrity. Exciting humor that you've never seen or heard before, unless you've read my website or followed my career in any way. And special features including Our Celebrity Betters, Naming of Parts, and J'accuse, in which I ask people to justify atrocities with which they had nothing to do. All that, plus comedy, politics, pop culture, and more ending sentences with prepositions than at which you can shake a stick. On tonight's Petardcast. Most listeners, if they know me at all, and if they don't, shame on them, will know me from my long-running column in the New York Times entitled Titbits, in which I offered brief observations on modern life to get urban professionals and their ilk through the day with a minimum of stress and strain. These were discontinued in 1989 due to a number of injunctions, plagiarism lawsuits, and restraining orders. But given this brave new world of technology, I would like to announce with some pleasure that I'm reviving them here. The only thing that kept me out of the NBA was racial prejudice. I was blackballed from competitive basketball solely because I'm white and short and fat. And I can't jump or shoot or dunk. I'm a bad rebounder and a terrible defender. I can't think tactically. I have no body awareness, and I never know where my teammates are on the court. I have trouble blocking shots, controlling the ball, and remembering which team I'm on or which basket is in play. And for that, I couldn't even get a tryout. It's nothing but reverse racism. My best friend's nephew was talking to me about his school's career day after I took him to the Indian reservation to buy discounted cigarettes. He told me that he really wanted to be a doctor, but he couldn't stand the sight of blood. I reassured him that you can just break someone's fingers or hit him in the stomach and kidneys with a bag of oranges if they don't pay their bill, and they don't bleed at all. He seemed reassured because he didn't say anything to me for the rest of the trip. People always talk about Hitler's final solution like it was some terrible thing. Hey, I say he failed, right? There are still Jews, so what's the big deal? If I had to name one thing that makes me really proud to be an American, I guess it would be my cock. Many years had elapsed during which nothing of Cambrai, save what was comprised in the theater and the drama of my going to bed there, had any existence for me. When one day in winter, as I came home, my mother, seeing that I was cold, offered me some tea, a thing I did not ordinarily take. I declined at first, and then, for no particular reason, changed my mind. She sent out for one of those short, plump little cakes called Petites Madeleines, and they look as though they had been molded in the fluted scallop of a pilgrim shell. Soon, mechanically, weary after a dull day with the prospect of a depressing morrow, I raised to my lips a spoonful of the tea which I had soaked a morsel of the cake. No sooner had the warm liquid and the crumbs with it touched my palate than a shudder ran through my whole body and I cried out, "Ma, what are they, out of fucking Hydrox?" Call me old-fashioned, but I believe so much of the political divisiveness, bitterness, and anger in our country today could be avoided if we just followed the golden rule: eliminate the capital gains tax. I know that many people are skeptical of my alien abduction story. They say that it's inconsistent or crazy, that I tell it differently every time, that I make up words when telling it, that there are no witnesses or proof or corroborating evidence, and that I am a mentally unstable alcoholic with a, quote, history of pathological lying. But I know what happened to me. I was there and they weren't. And if I wasn't anally probed by extraterrestrials, why do I cruise gay bars every night? Answer me that, scientist. If I were to make a list of qualities I am looking for in a best friend, I would start with honesty, integrity, faithfulness, a large inheritance, reliability, kindness, poor memory, forgiveness, a sense of humor, and fainting spells. Not in that order, though. Whenever someone talks about how successful Bill Gates is, I ask them, if he's so great, how come he's not some brilliant businessman who's parlayed his computer company into the world's most powerful corporation and made himself one of the richest men on Earth? And they say he is. That's when I realize I don't know who Bill Gates is. One of the most amazing things about music is how individual songs can carry with them deep personal meaning, how simply hearing one can trigger the most specific and powerful sense memories. For example, I can't hear House of the Rising Sun without thinking about the time I spent in New Orleans hanging around in a bordello, or Folsom Prison Blues without recalling how I once shot a man in Reno just to watch him die, or Hot for Teacher without remembering how I was once the lead guitarist for Van Halen for over 15 years. And yet, for someone else, those songs might mean something completely different. The church near my home has a big marquee in the front where they put little messages that are supposed to be funny and insightful, just these little pieces of advice about how to lead your life in a more spiritually fulfilling way. Usually they're quite comforting, but this week it said, God has a big eraser. I don't know about you, but that completely creeps me out. I mean, I guess it's supposed to mean that God can just wipe clean any mistake you make, but since it's God, what if he just decides to erase the whole universe? Also, and I don't want to seem like I'm second-guessing God here, especially now that I know he has a big eraser, but this is 2010. Shouldn't God have a big delete key by this point? There's a lot going on in the world, and I feel like he shouldn't be spending a lot of time manually going through all of his records. When I tried to ask the minister about this, he told me to come back during the daytime when the door to his house wasn't locked. People are always asking me why I call this the Petardcast, or for my social security number. My brother Ray and I have a lot in common, but the one thing that I've never really been able to understand is why he doesn't share my love of the open road. Just the other day, I was talking about how much I love to just pile into the car, load up on some food, hit the highway, drive off in any direction, any time of day, with no direction in mind, just to see what the road reveals to me. He said he didn't quite see it that way, and I told him we'd just have to agree to disagree. I think that's when he asked if I could untie him from the front bumper, but it was hard to hear over the roar of the wind. One thing that really bugs me is when people use meaningless, trendy psychobabble, you know, buzzwords, when they can't think of anything really insightful to say. I mean, I guess if your definition of a so-called alcoholic is someone who can't stop drinking no matter how much it harmfully affects his health, family, and ability to earn a living, then fine, I'm an alcoholic. And I guess if your idea of a good time is to label every single person who ties up a drifter and sets them on fire in an abandoned Plymouth a murderer, then I guess I'm that too, Professor Freud. You know what I really miss? Coca-Cola. Does anybody else remember that? How come we can't get that stuff anymore? I always like to help out my coworkers, especially when they're doing stuff like writing their self-evaluations come review time. It's really hard to honestly appraise your own talents without seeming either too self-deprecating or too egotistical, so I give them little bits of advice about how to write a good one. Management, for example, really likes metrics, these cold, hard numbers that allow you to objectively measure your job performance. So to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, you could say, the dollar value of company property I steal on a quarterly basis is down 34% from this time last year. They also really like it when you show your progress on a given goal, but make it clear that you still want to improve towards an achievable end result. So you could say, I have my compulsion to steal company property almost completely under control, and I believe I can eliminate it completely by 2020. Evolution is something I don't think should be taught in schools, because I just find it too difficult to believe that humanity could possibly have evolved from monkeys. I do believe, however, that monkeys evolved from laser-eyed space lizards, and that horses have vestigial dolphin fins hidden inside a third stomach. And that's why I'm suing the Department of Education for $3 trillion. One of our ongoing features here at the Petardcast is called Naming of Parts. And this is where we look at a beloved Hollywood actor or actress and go through all of the parts that they played and analyze their names. I'm not sure exactly what we're supposed to gain from this. Maybe a Freudian or a Jungian or a one of those other people who are really into psychiatry. A Scientologist might be able to draw some pattern from the names of characters that people choose to play. But here we just do it as a sort of public service and to fill up the middle third of the podcast. We're going to start out with beloved TV and film actor Jeff Goldblum, who perpetually seems around 39 years old to me, so I'm always surprised to see that he's been making movies since the early 70s. But I'm a big fan of Jeff Goldblum, so let's take a look through his filmography, see the names of the characters he's chosen to play over the years. Like a lot of young actors, Jeff Goldblum started out playing people who are numbers, with, in his very first film, Death Wish, Freak Number One. And in fact, that's what all of his friends still call him. It's a, you know, a little inside nickname. They call him Freak Number One. He went on to play Hood Number Three in a movie called St. Ives. But that was the end of playing people who were numbers for Jeff Goldblum. He got some big roles right away and moved away from people who are numbers. He did once play a person who was letters. In Igby Goes Down, he plays a character named D.H. But Jeff Goldblum is a man of significant pride, and it was a rare thing that he would play somebody who consisted of only two letters. He moved on to people who are things, starting with playing a protester on an episode of Columbo, and memorably played a party guest in Annie Hall. He played both a narrator and a Civil War narrator in beloved sketch comedy show Mr. Show with Bob and David. He once played a pianist, a military recruiter, it's a little unlikely, but nonetheless true, and of course, in one of my favorite movies, Nashville, by Robert Altman, he played Tricycle Man, which you scarcely need me to tell you that, because Tricycle Man went on to be the star of many spin-off films. He also played a few characters who are nicknames. New Jersey in the cult classic Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. And he also played a character named Snake and a character named Slick. I'm not sure which is the more unlikely role for Jeff Goldblum, a Snake or a Slick, but he played both. Before we go on to people who are only last names, I want to go through a couple of the rules of naming of parts here. First of all, we try to avoid animation or voiceovers because we don't want people's resumes to be padded out with characters named Fox or Wise Moose or things like that. We also don't go for places where people play themselves. And we also, we tend to avoid anything where it's a video game, so sorry, nerds, you're going to have to look to the whole rest of the internet for that. And also, we didn't watch any of the movies before we go through this. It's strictly an intellectual exercise. I'm not going to sit down and watch 97 Jeff Goldblum movies in a row, and I don't think Jeff Goldblum is either. So when I tell you that he once played a character named Hatch in a movie called Hideaway, that's really an assumption on my part that it was a character with the last name of Hatch. He possibly might have played an actual hatch, you know, a metal grate or a doorway or something, and that in fact the movie was called Hideaway because there were people hiding behind the hatch as played by Jeff Goldblum. But I'm going to assume that the more common interpretation that it was his character's name is the correct one. He played a number of people who were only first names in more or less ascending order of plausibility. He's played a Jamie, a Tony, a Jack, a Stuart, a Bruce, a Bob, a Mac, a Wiley, a Leonard, and an Avnet. Only once has he played a Jeff. He played a character named Jeffrey in an episode of Laverne and Shirley. He's played a few characters who have no first names but titles. An Agent Fulbright, a Professor Brody, a Mr. Frost, which is actually Satan's real name. It's Satan J. Frost. And he played a character named Mr. Nudd in a film called Remember My Name. And I think we can agree that if you want people to remember your name, a good way to do it is to be named Mr. Nudd. A couple of macho names, and a lot of American character actors and even mainstream actors have names that sound like they belong to a big chin blonde guy in a 60s comic book. For obvious reasons, Jeff Goldblum doesn't have a lot of these, but he has a couple. He played a character named Dexter King in The Tall Guy, and in an episode of Fairy Tale Theater, he played Buck Wolf, who was actually a wolf, but sounds like a porn star. The most common type of name in any actor or actress's filmography are what I call WASP names, and they aren't necessarily a judgment on their character's religion or ethnic status or anything. It's just that this being America and all, most movie characters tend to have names that sound like they should own a car dealership. So Jeff Goldblum has played quite a few of these. He's played George Gordon, a David Jason, a Mitchell Caine, a Ben Dansmore, that's almost a tough guy name, a Mike Riddell, a Leonard Hayes, his second Leonard, a Jerry Barnes, a Harry Markham, a Jim Watson, here he was playing the famous geneticist, a Ricky Hayman, a Michael Rains, the floridly Irish Mickey Holliday, a John Nolan, a Scott Woolley, a Leo Gibbs, arguably his third Leonard, a Daniel Gillis, a Donald Ripley, a Lloyd Harris, a Jack Harrison, a Sean Fletcher, an Alistair Hennessy in The Life Aquatic. He played Ichabod Crane once in a TV movie version of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And my favorite WASPy name for a Jeff Goldblum character, Lionel Whitney, which was his character in the early 80s TV show 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. And while I was researching this piece, I discovered that there was an episode of 10 Speed and Brown Shoe called The 16-Byte Data Chip and the Brown-Eyed Fox. I think since a 16-byte data chip can hold about as much information as a business card, that's a hell of a MacGuffin right there. He played a couple of characters with quirky names, Ed Oaken, a Howard Pigeon, and a Nick Deasy in the unforgettable Cyndi Lauper vehicle Vibes. A few ethnic characters, Max Arloft, an Alex Papageorgiou, a Jack Belichick, a Seth Brundle, of course, in The Fly. I'm not sure if that's really an ethnic name, but it's kind of a strange one, so I throw it into that category because ethnic equals strange. That's just, it's just the rule here in America. He played Ernie Kovacs, the beloved TV comedian, in a TV movie based on his life. A character named Clyde Baxter, but really his name was Charlie Belenikov. An Al Gorky, who I believe was the vice president of Poland. Herbert Biberman, an Adam Stein, a David Levinson, and a Michael Gold in the Big Chill star-making role for Jeff Goldblum. And then he finally played a couple of characters who have fancy titles. Dr. Aldo Garrig, Dr. Ian Malcolm, of course, his role in Jurassic Park. And in a few episodes of Law & Order Criminal Intent, which is the 472nd of the 800 Law & Order shows that are currently on the air, he played a detective, Zach Nichols, who, to be honest, also sounds like he should own a car dealership. So thank you. This has been Naming of Parts with Jeff Goldblum. Not with him, but about him. But I like to think he somehow learned about this and is even now preparing a lawsuit. This next piece is for all the aspiring journalists who are listening today, and I'm sure there are a lot of them. Who? That one guy who's always hanging around by the tire store. Just some dudes. You wouldn't know her. She lives in Canada, but her name is Melissa Peabody. wealthy young gadabout Herbert Hirschman, the producers of Fantasy II Vampire Van, some guys in a lowrider, I think they were in a gang or something, former Texas Governor George W. Bush, Livy, the legendary historian of ancient Rome, described by Michael Grant as an epic poet in prose, a cybernetic shark constructed by the sinister genius Dr. Eusebio and coated with a special silver polymer coating that makes it effectively laser-proof. Professor Gallows. A bowling team consisting of Hank Williams, Gilles Deleuze, and Christian Hosoi. This chick with a fat can. Your mama. At any rate, it certainly wasn't me. What? A raging four-alarm blaze at one of the downtown area's oldest and most historically significant buildings. The story's Key of Ascalon, given to you by the dwarf king Piorme for rescuing his daughter from the Wither Demon. The Super Pineapple Pesto Pizza at Regino's Pizza Pudding Green. $5 and some change. A dime bag of the craziest Jamaican redhead you'll ever toke in your fucking life, dude. The Tomb of the Extremely Well-Known Sailor. A computer keyboard where all the keys are Egyptian hieroglyphic characters from the Rosetta Stone. The rug that the cats puked on. A bronzed adult diaper reading Tootsie. A bootleg DVD of Asses of Death. A hat that keeps you from sweating. A loaded 9mm, a briefcase full of cocaine, and the fastest car you've got on the lot. Look, man, I don't know what it is. I just found it. Why? Because it was there. Because everybody's doing it. Because God told me to, and I still wasn't sure, so I asked him for clarification, and he told me to again, but this time in much more detail. Because if I hadn't done it, someone else would have, although probably with less bloodshed. Because I didn't want to be the last one in the dorm with a tattoo on his neck. Because I thought you wanted to. Because I read too many romance novels set in 15th century Italy. Because it's the law. Because ever since I found out the president got a blowjob, it seems like nothing means anything anymore. Because damn it, somebody had to take a stand, and it wasn't going to be me. Because I heard it was legal in this country. Because otherwise my testicles would have dropped off like a couple of overripe bananas. I just did, okay? Do I have to have a reason for everything? Where? Over there by the cabinet. No, not that cabinet. That one. Over there with the thing hanging on it. Elmwood, a quiet, unassuming town somewhere in the Great Plains of the Midwest. Up your ass, that's where. Either at home or at the office, depending on whether or not I remembered to buy condoms. In my other pants. Nazi Germany, just prior to the invasion of Poland, in a tiny dank tavern called Der Schnappnippel. In a sub-basement of the famed pre-prohibition breweries of Dandy Dirk's Peppermint Beer Company. On page 437 of the sixth novel in the series, just before St. Peter does the striptease. In Bangladesh or Sri Lanka or Vietnam or one of those fucked up countries. Stuffed under a drainage culvert out on Route 109. At the head of my pedo. Either inside the case for my videotape of King Solomon's mind or in King Solomon's actual mind. How the hell should I know? When? 15 seconds ago, before there was any conception of time, in exactly 3 minutes and 22 seconds, so for God's sake, hurry! At Ramadan, the day the music died. September 11th, 2001, but not the September 11th, 2001 you're thinking of. Right before I fire your ass. After America's dumbest reality show contestants. 6 times a day, 9 if I can get my hands on some raw vitamin E. At the exact same time Reverend Dupree was winding his watch in the clock tower. Same time it was this time yesterday. Later than you think. I don't know, I wasn't keeping track. How? The same way everyone else does it, one link at a time. Using a crudely made noose, some rotten artichokes, and an old Frito-Lay coupon. I can travel instantly from place to place without covering the intervening distance. It took a lot of work, but through the grace of God, the love of a good woman, and several pounds of concentrated plastic explosives, I pulled it off. It happens naturally when you reach a certain age. I'm not sure, but I know if you keep forcing it like that, it's going to break. Just like you told me to with the cheese grater. I don't know, I just sort of winged it. You just have to blend it with a little canola oil and arsenic. The same way as my father did, and his father's father, and going all the way back to my great-great-great-grandfather, who didn't do it at all because electricity hadn't been invented yet. I went back in time and fixed it so that the laws of physics were never discovered. By standing on a chair. Whatever the case, there's no way you could have done it by yourself. Folks, I'm going to be honest with you. I know a lot of celebrities. I've interviewed them. I've befriended them. I've planned to kidnap them. I've sat with them, near them, at them, and occasionally on them. And I'm not giving away any confidences here. Celebrities are betters. Celebrities are better people than us, and that's why they're celebrities. It's not a coincidence. Their constant comings and goings, their every move, every time they go to a fancy, expensive party to commemorate something that will be forgotten within a day or so, that's important. We need to know about that, and that is why there is a celebrity news industry. But a lot of people look down on celebrity news. You know, they think that it's frivolous or meaningless, or other words ending in less or inducing. But not me. I think celebrity news is important, and that's why every week in this space, we're going to pick a few articles out of the most important celebrity news venues and just read them. We're just going to read them and learn about celebrities because they're our aristocracy. Without their guiding example, where would we be? We'd be no better than dogs. So from today's TMZ.com, comes the news that Britney Spears has, or as TMZ puts it, -, millions of dollars, or as TMZ puts it, $$$$, on the move. Britney Spears worked hard for her money. Now she wants her money to work for her, with the help of some big shot financial advisors. It seems Brit has, quote, several million dollars laying around in a trust account that isn't making nearly as much money as Brit's conservators believe it should. So the conservators went to the courts asking for permission to give control of the money to financial advisors at Merrill Lynch and UBS Financial Services. To invest the cash as they see fit. According to documents filed at LA County Superior Court, the judge signed off on the move, and Brit's money will be stimulating the economy in no time. Move on to People magazine from yesterday, reporting Kim Kardashian, who is famous for having parents who have the same name as her, has, quote, mixed feelings about turning 30. Age is just a number. But for Kim Kardashian, the idea of turning 30 isn't always so easy. I'm not quite sure of the phrasing there. Is the idea of turning 30 sometimes that easy? Or has she turned 30 more than once and had different feelings about it? Well, anyway. I have mixed feelings, she told people on Friday at Tao, Las Vegas, where she was celebrating her big birthday a few days early. Quote, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I'm turning 30, and I'm freaking out. Like, it sounds so old, she said. And then the other half of me is like, I feel so accomplished, and it's really no different than 29. But her family isn't letting her forget about the milestone. Brother Rob Kardashian said he is already giving his sister grief about her age, although she doesn't actually turn the big 3-0 until October 21st. We've literally been clowning her all day, he told people at the bash, sponsored by the video game Fallout New Vegas. Mom Kris Jenner, meanwhile, has let her daughter know that she had 4 children by the age of 30. I've definitely heard that a few times, Kardashian said. Later, during a toast to her daughter during dinner, Jenner offered her sincere thoughts, plus a little plea. I wish you all the love and happiness, she said. We know what toast these people made at their daughter's 30th birthday party. No pressure, quoth Ma Jenner, but if you happen to find a husband and have 1,000 kids, I'd really be happy. It would make me happy, too. After the speeches and dinner, guests continued partying inside Tao. And Kardashian, who will continue her birthday celebration Saturday in the Big Apple at the 10-year anniversary of Tao, New York, couldn't seem happier. Sipping champagne and white Russian cocktails and laughing with her family and friends like Kelly Rowland from a private skybox overlooking the club. She was later presented with a 3-tiered red and black birthday cake before moving the party onto the dance floor where she and Khloe Kardashian took turns hyping up the crowd on the microphone. Partying aside, there's more to this story. The socialite said that although she is, quote, freaking out, remember earlier she said that, about aging another year, she isn't changing anything about her romantic life. She's not rushing to find a boyfriend. You know, I've always been one to say, you don't need anyone to define you, she said, donning a metallic dress by John Richmond. I like that sentence. I'm very happy with myself. Actually, it says, I'm very happy with myself. That sounds plausible. I'm married to my career. I'm married to my family. Okay. I have the best friends that any girl could ask for, she said. I'm so happy and fulfilled. Finally, we'll bring to a close this segment of Celebrities Are Our Betters with this article from October 15th, OK Magazine, OK.com. I don't actually go out and buy these magazines. I mean, I already know most of this stuff, you know. It's from OK Magazine, October 15th, Michelle Williams is lacy and lovely in London. The article begins. Stop it, Michelle Williams. Just stop being so dang perfect and adorable all the time. You're making it really hard for the rest of the world to live up to such cuteness and style. That's true. Michelle brought out a lovely lace dress and rocked a swept back hairdo for the Blue Valentine premiere during the 54th BFI London Film Festival at the View West End on Friday. While she looked gorgeous on the red carpet, we, we can't help but wonder where Bo and co-star Ryan Gosling was at the event. Those are two different people, by the way, so that sentence is grammatically correct. It's not a person named Bo and co-star Ryan Gosling. They're the same person. He is her beau. The only thing more fun than Michelle at a premiere is seeing Michelle and Ryan together at a premiere. Although their flick recently got an NC-17, considered box office doom, the film's producers are reportedly going to fight that rating. As you probably know, if you have researched my career as closely as I have researched what might be more fun than seeing Michelle Williams at a premiere, I am a freelance writer. And as a freelance writer, I often have a great deal of research to do on a particular subject in a very short period of time. And while I strive at all times to be professional and double-check all factual matters before going to press, an occasional error will slip through. I would like to, therefore, offer, with regrets, the following corrections to some of my recent pieces. In a piece on ecotourism for Condé Nast Traveler, I stated there was outstanding surfing to be had near the village of Dam Siep on the island of Korang Samlon. In fact, Dam Siep is located on the nearby island of Kopalawe. In a piece for Living History, while discussing the difficulties facing recent European immigrants who attempt to assimilate into American culture, a passage on page 27 stated that Slovenians are in the habit of eating their second-born children. It should have read, Slovenians are in the habit of beating their second-born children. In a piece for Auto Trader, some readers inferred from paragraph 3 that I do not believe front-side airbags are effective safety measures, and those that do are moronic dupes who don't understand the first thing about engineering, physics, or basic human communication. I regret the inference. I meant, in fact, to state this opinion boldly rather than imply it subtly. In a review of Cream for Madness's new CD in Paste magazine, I stated that lead singer Hannah Karen Loisel was a whore-born, low-life, junkie pig who would sell her own mother for the price of a dirty needle, and that if she had any less talent at singing, an entirely new system of negative mathematics would have to be invented to describe it. In fact, Hannah Loisel's middle name is Joan. In a piece on political corruption at the San Antonio Department of Sanitation for the Express News, I stated that Commissioner Elias Gomez had taken kickbacks from private contractors in excess of $3 million in exchange for favorable bidding status, and also that he is a werepigeon who feeds on the blood of babies who have been abandoned in recycling bins. Although my source for this information, Cacklin Joe of the Behind the Fuzzies Liquor Store Joe's, has been a reliable informant in the past, it appears that in this instance, he delivered flawed information. In my recent book, Squatsilia, Europe's Colossal Post-War Economic Dynamo, I made two errors on page 1 of chapter 1. First, the Nazis did not win the Second World War, and also there is no such country as Squatsilia. The remaining 748 pages should be read with these corrections in mind. In a recent article for Comic Book Resources, I stated that due to market fluctuations and collector dumping, Captain America No. 1 from 1941 is now only worth $1.27 in mint condition. This is not in the strictest sense true, nor is it in true in any other more generous sense of the word true. All those who sold me their copies of Captain America No. 1 after the publication of the piece will receive a hand-signed and authenticated letter of apology from the magazine. In my piece for Catholic Woman Today regarding the healing power of prayer, I neglected to mention that God and the soul and Jesus and the Virgin Mary are just a bunch of made-up bullshit. Without this piece of information, none of the rest of the article makes any sense whatsoever. However, Catholic Woman Today has refused to honor my request for a retraction until I remove the word dumbass in reference to the magazine's readers and the Pope. My piece on the Fantasy League trade value of Alfonso Soriano was meant to appear in USA Today Sports Weekly and not in the American Journal of Tentacle Rape Studies. Strictly speaking, the parts of my article in New Scientist entitled Vitaly Ginsburg's Nightmare of Depravity, where I claim that the Russian physicist who won the Nobel Prize in 2003 for his work on superconductor theory has become involved in methamphetamine abuse and human trafficking, are not true. However, since they form the only substantive parts of the article other than his name and age, I stand by the claims. In my Wall Street Journal opinion piece where I handicap the upcoming presidential race, all the information contained therein is absolutely and completely accurate. However, the headline should be changed to read, Who Will Win the White House in 1972? In my piece on the upcoming Criterion Collection re-release of Ozu's Tokyo Story, the paragraph dealing with the mutant vampire attack refers to an early unreleased cut of the film. This footage will not, unfortunately, be included on the Criterion disc. And finally, my New York Review of Books critique of Mark Danielewski's novel Only Revolutions should not have referred to the writer as a big homo. It should have referred to him as six big homos. Well, that's it for tonight's edition of the Petardcast. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next week for more questionable hilarity, naming of parts, celebrities are our betters, and other features, as well as our first special guest, whose identity will shock and amaze you. And if you're interested in appearing on the show, inquiries are welcome at guests@ludiclive.com. That's LudicLive.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the Petardcast free of charge on iTunes or listen anytime at ludiclive.com. We're always happy to hear from you at info@ludiclive.com. This episode is dedicated to Erwin Schwab and Louis Turkle. Thanks to my neighbor's dog and the San Antonio Police Department for making unscheduled audio appearances. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, and I'll see you when you're sleeping.